Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I want to say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just want to use your love tonight. I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Zolak and Bertrand, Hardy and Phil Perry filling in. 617-779-0985. Patriots win last night over the Eagles, 37-20. Helmet rule enforced four times last night, once on the Patriots, three times on the Eagles. And there's a lot of chatter about it on the radio side with Dan Roach and Matt Chatham. I know Chatham talked about it a lot last night during the game. Bob Soucy and Scott Zolak on the TV side, not only here locally, but on the NFL network. And the league is paying attention. They are watching the officials. They are watching and listening to the commentators to see what they have to say. Scott Zolak just joined us, and he said, yeah, we heard about it last night. We're going to have a meeting about it again this week. Phil, you've been in some of these meetings where they're trying to explain what's going on. And, you know, maybe I'm being naive or too easy or too nice about it, but I do take it as a positive in that the league is not just saying, nope, this is the way it is and this is the way it's going to be and you guys are going to have to deal with it. They're listening to the reaction. They are reacting to the reaction, and they're trying to get everyone on the same page because, as you said, this isn't going away. They're trying to make the game safer. They don't want to have more head injuries than are absolutely necessary in this game.
And they want to show that they're making an effort. Too. There's a lot of motivation. Well,
I guess
these rules are in place.
Yeah, they also are doing this in a way to cover their own ass. You know, we're the safest league on the planet. Are you kidding? Look at all we're doing here. So some of it's a bit of a show, I'm sure. But I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that their heart is in the right place and they're doing this to try and get, you know, these catastrophic head injuries and the long-term effects, if not out of the game, at least get the numbers down.
Certainly. And they don't want good players getting injured. They don't want players missing time. If they feel like this allows them to have a better product in terms of the talent that's on the field, then that's something they're going to pursue as well. And you're right. Not only are they reacting to the reaction, they were trying to preempt the reaction by meeting with us before any preseason games,
right,
by meeting with Zoe, by doing these production meetings. Did think it was interesting that Zoe was sort of being a little bit elusive there in terms of who actually called in or who he heard from or
how the reaction was portrayed.
That was fascinating to me. It must have been, this is just me guessing here. I'm assuming that is a high-ranking person somewhere caught wind of something and relayed some kind of message because otherwise there would be no reaction.
Well, I think Zoe's just being careful because I don't think he picked up the phone in the booth and spoke directly to that person. I think there were messages relayed back and forth. So, no, he's just...
But it tells you that they are listening and they want to know how the message is being conveyed when it comes to this rule because they know it's going to be a topic of conversation all season long.
Let's go to Danny and Blackstone on this. Danny, you're on with Hardy and Phil Perry. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, Danny?
So, a quick comment about the helmet rule, and then I want to get your opinion on something about the game. So, I think with the helmet rule, I get what the league's trying to do, and, you know, what they're doing is important, but I think there's a difference between trying to eliminate, you know, malicious, dangerous hits and changing the way a defensive player instinctively does something. These tackles are made in absolute split second. And I think it would, you know, the best analogy I can come up with is like suddenly you ban slam dunks or you start telling baseball hitters that they have to keep both hands on the bat throughout the entirety of their swing. You're changing the way they've been doing something for almost the entire way that they've been doing it. So I think that that's where it's going to be really hard to prevent these hits from happening. But then as far as the game, I just want to know, is there anything that you saw that you were concerned about before that now you're not so concerned about, and then the other way around? Is there anything that you weren't worried about that now you kind of see as a glaring hole or problem that the Pats are going to have going forward? All right, I'll let you go and answer. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Danny.
So to answer your question about, I think it was the second question first, where's the problem that you didn't foresee that is now a problem? I think it's your tackle depth. And I think it's the Isaiah Wynn news. That's the news of the day. And you could say, well, he's going to be a backup tackle. What's the big deal? You need backup tackles. You need them bad, especially when one of your starters is Marcus Cannon, who has missed time each of the last two seasons. You know, he had that incredible second-team All-Pro year in 2016. So it was really last season. It was last season where he missed about half the year. And now he's missing time again. Tackle depth is critical. It is everything to your offense. Honestly, I would say after quarterback play, tackle play is probably right there. And to lose a guy that you thought could play and that you thought might have the potential to start if somebody like Cannon were to go down, that is a huge, huge blow. So, listen, they have set themselves up, I would say, relatively nicely. Like, they have loaded up on veteran tackles, young guys. Cole Croston's in the mix. He was on the roster all last season because they didn't want to expose him to waivers, and they didn't want to lose him because they like him that much. He's a guy who can play guard and tackle. Ulrich John is in the building. Matt Tobin is in the building. These are people that nobody has ever heard of before, but they're all here, and they all are legitimate NFL players with legitimate experience because the Patriots know how important it is to have tackle depth. So you're going to see some names that make this 53-man roster, Hardy, in September that you're scratching your head and you're saying, who the hell is that? What is an Ulrich John? But he's going to be on the team because the Patriots know you need guys that can give you a representative type of effort on the outside.
And in terms of things that you may have been worried about that weren't now, I know there were people who worried and wondered about Tom Brady's readiness after missing a couple of voluntaries, not having a ton of work in the camp so far. The camp has had a different reported feel and maybe a different actual feel in terms of intensity. Watching him in the first half last night, if you're worried about how Tom Brady was going to look, I think those fears are gone.
That's a huge takeaway. You know, aside from the Wynn news, before we heard that was, for me, the biggest takeaway from last night was that Brady looks like he is where he should be or where he is normally at this time of year. Accurate, moved well in the pocket. There are a handful of plays that, you know, even if they resulted in incompletions, his ability to get away from the rush, to extend the play, to throw a scramble drill touchdown to Chris Hogan, all that is positive. And I think if anyone out there, and I would lump myself into this group of people that were wondering, how will the missed time in the spring impact him? It's different. It was a different offseason than he's ever had before. What is he going to look like when the bullets, quote unquote, are live? And he looked fine.
Seth is in the car. He's got a comparison to the NBA with this helmet rule. What is it, Seth?
I'm just wondering if you guys kind of remember the preseason for last year. They had all these little points of emphasis, like delay of games and things like that, that made these NBA preseason games kind of impossible to watch. Do you think this rule here could kind of be a point of emphasis that they're overcalling during these preseason games? And not that it'll, I mean, maybe die down a little bit and not completely eliminate itself. I know there will be changes, but you think it'll kind of just relax a little as the season goes on?
I think Phil said it. I think Zoe said it. Yeah, I don't think you're going to see this number of calls for two reasons. Number one, there are certain calls where it's legitimate and players are going to get that out of their game. And if they don't, they're not going to play. If they're a player that is expendable or they can have their number of snaps reduced, coaches aren't going to put him on the field. This guy can't not lead with his helmet. We can't afford the 15 yards every time he does it. So they're not going to play or they're going to legislate it out themselves by dialing it back. And I think they will dial back the number of times they call it.
Guys, that is going to be a fascinating byproduct to this whole rule. Guys like Brandon Merriweather, and there's not that many of them anymore, but guys like Brandon Merriweather or Brandon Spikes, for instance, guys who had no issue leading with the helmet.
Loved it.
They loved it. I mean, that was how they played. They wanted to play that way. They wanted to inflict pain. They wanted to strike fear into the hearts of skill position players on the other side of the football. Those guys are going to become even more rare across the league because you can't be picking up 15-yard penalties.
Right.
Never mind, you know, once a week. Some of these guys, if you were to look back at football even 5 years ago, you would be looking at players who would be dishing out probably on a series-to-series basis a hit that would garner a 15-yard penalty. Those guys are going to be gone. I thought one takeaway on the other side of this rule, And I don't know how conscious he was of this at the time. I did not talk to him specifically last night, but I will talk to him soon. Was Devin McCourty, I thought, put on a clinic. And I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL grabbed tape of the open field tackles that Devin McCourty made last night and said, this is how you're supposed to do it. Because there were times where he was one-on-one with a ball carrier or he was pursuing at an angle, got the head totally out of the play. He's basically throwing his body sideways into a player's lower body to take him out. And is it all that harmful in terms of what it's doing to the ball carrier? No. Is it inflicting pain? Is it inflicting fear? No. But it's effective, and it's exactly what the NFL is looking for in terms of taking the head out of the play. So I thought McCourty, and again, this is how he tackles. It's how he's tackled for years. He's not a quote-unquote big hitter. He's not a lead-with-the-head guy. But I thought those were pretty clear examples of what the league is looking for.
All right, we got one open line. If you want to grab it, do it now. 617-779-0985. More of your calls coming up next.
Without Zolak and Bertrand, your workday is just pushing papers and eating lunch.
What, is there a problem?
With Zolak and Bertrand, it's pushing papers, eating lunch, and talking sports.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Way better. Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
A lot of calls about the helmet rule here in the NFL. Before we get to that, Cal's been on hold in Manchester for quite a while. Cal, you had a comment on another earlier subject. What is it? What is it, please, Cal?
Yes, the Bears versus the Sharks.
Yeah,
I think, let's go, Cal.
A lot of people are missing out on what type of bear they're dealing with. I have some interesting stats that, for instance, a male grizzly bear attack is because they're trying to kill and eat you. And the mortality rate in a male grizzly bear attack is over 99%. And then even worse than that is polar bears are the only predator known that actively still currently hunts human beings. And they're so smart that they know their nose is black that sticks out in the snow, so they cover their own nose with snow. So if you're attacked by a polar bear, they've been hunting you, so you're already dead.
Cal, fascinating that you have this much information at your disposal about various kinds of bear attacks.
Bear analytics.
Yeah.
That's what that was right there.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Cal.
Scott Zolak on the broadcast last night, when he wasn't discussing the helmet rule or football, also discussed sharks and bears. We're going to have that audio coming up at 12:37, let's say. Okay? Everybody good with that?
I'm great with that.
In the meantime, Steve in West Roxbury has a question for you, Phil Perry. Go ahead, Steve.
Steve.
All right. I'm going to put Steve on hold.
Quack, quack. West Roxbury.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There you go.
Hi, Steve. Hello.
Hey, you could put James White in the slot to take Phil Perry.
I got you, Steve. I'm here.
So you could put James White in the slot for Julian Edelman.
I like that take.
Absolutely.
I agree. I think what he's getting at, Hardy, there is that the running backs, you see, they can catch passes as well. It's not just the receivers that catch the passes. So if you have a running back who can catch the football like James White, he could help make up for the loss of somebody like Julian Edelman. And I would agree with that. The issue here is that even your running back depth has been sapped. We're talking about the tackle depth. We've talked about receiver depth. Rex Burkhead's dealing with an injury.
I'm not laughing at Rex Burkhead.
Sony Michel's dealing with an injury.
I hate Tom Morgan so much right now.
I just want to reiterate, that guy was fine.
Steve?
He survived that attack.
Oh,
no, audio we're hearing. Guy was totally fine.
Stephen West Roxbury is fine,
Stephen
too.
West Roxbury, different story.
No, it's not different. He's fine, too. I'm pretty sure that's the guy who takes up, you know, the multiple spots in the Roach Brothers parking lot there in West Roxbury, in the Grand Marquis. It's okay.
Does that happen?
Yeah. You got to pick your times when you go to that supermarket.
I'm not familiar with that one.
That's okay.
I'm not there. But I think running back depth is an issue, Hardy. We haven't touched on that. It is an issue. No more Rex Burkhead. We haven't seen Rex Burkhead.
All right. Let's go to Jay in Rhode Island.
You don't care. I care about Rex Burkhead.
I do not care a whole lot about Rex Burkhead.
He was your lead back. He was going to be your lead back, it looked like. He still may be.
There was no lead back for the Patriots.
What would you call the guy who ends up getting the most snaps in a season? Would you call that your lead back?
Yeah, if it were consistent from game to game, but it changes from game to game.
Rex Burkhead looked like the best chance at being your consistent go-to guy.
Slot a little bit.
He was your all-purpose guy. You lost Deion Lewis. He was your all-purpose guy. Rex Burkhead was your next best bet there.
Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering, with the helmet rule, I thought that maybe they could do some type of, like, warning flag thing where they where things that aren't so egregious, they kind of have, like, a warning out there.
Kind of like a yellow card and then the red card.
People are developing, are still learning how to deal with this new helmet rule thing. I just wanted to get your guys' take. Thanks.
So, maybe a flashing yellow flag?
A yellow card.
Like, maybe you incorporate, you put, like, a few of those little bright light bulbs in the flag, and you click a button so that it flashes. And
warning.
It's like, that's not, like, a real yellow. That's a flashing yellow.
Warning.
So, just so you guys know, right? It's almost like an umpire coming out. It's almost like an umpire coming out and warning both teams when somebody's been thrown at.
Point at him sternly and say, you've been warned. You've been warned.
The benches have been warned. Hardy's losing his mind. Are you laughing at the sound? We've heard the sound 1,000 times today, and it just hit you? It's hitting you now.
I think that makes it even better for him.
But the thought of...
Yeah, a grand marquee parked at the Whole Foods.
No, that can't be the
referee making that sound if you like lower your helmet like in the middle of the play, and that's the warning you get like mid play.
Patrick Chung turns around and says, "Dude, are you okay?
I'm back.
What the hell was that?
I swear to God, I'm okay.
I'm gonna retire that.
You can't do it anymore." Because I mean,
don't retire it. It's fine. It's good
for the day. For the sake of Hardy.
I'm punchy as it is.
He looks like he's about to die.
Phil has every right to be as punchy, but he's more professional than I am. So, thank goodness you're here, Alex in New Hampshire. Go ahead.
Hey guys, I'm joining the show. Just two main points, basically. I think this new rule totally gives the offense the advantage all day because they're going to lead forward with their head all the time. If they get gang tackled, I know you're talking about. Can't do it.
The rule applies to offensive players as well. Just so you know.
So tough for them to, like, who's diving first when it's a bang-bang play? Like a gang tackle play? I don't understand that. So you're going to have a defensive player in the back of his mind trying not to lead in with his helmet. I mean, the running back 9 times out of 10 is ducking his head down to avoid contact and ends up initiating contact. So now I just don't know how you avoid that rule.
It is. Okay. So I'll agree with him there. Hardy, you can just take the rest of the day. You know what? Just take the rest of the day. I got you. We only got an hour and a half left here. It's only 90 minutes. Should be fine.
I do apologize. I swear I'll
Silver
be okay.
And I got it.
I swear I'll be okay on the other side of this. I need like that 4 minute. Don't do it again.
This is going to be an issue because the referees have acknowledged this.
It's not just the tackler, it's the ball carrier.
It's the ball carrier as well. And you will see occasions where running backs will be stretching a play to the outside and there'll be a defender in pursuit. And the running back will go out of his way to lower his head into the side almost to fend off the defender in some ways, like a ram. That's illegal. You can't do it. They're going to be penalized for that. But the point he brings up where it's like, okay, who are we calling this thing on? If there is somebody making contact with the helmet, say they're both lowering their helmets, sometimes the running back is lowering his helmet to brace for contact, and there ends up being contact made.
All right.
The officials have acknowledged this, and they've compared this, Hardy, to a block charge sort of dilemma in basketball.
Yeah.
get back to Gene Steratore. We need that guy back on the field because these are going to be very difficult calls. It's the block charge phenomenon. People still don't know what that is in the NBA. You're going to have the same thing now in the NFL, and people are going to hate it.
Well, the people watching the NFL don't want more judgment calls. They like black and white. They like right and wrong. They
there
like
are tears streaming down your face.
I can't go splash cold water on my face. More on the helmet rule, more on the game last night, and Scott Zolak addressing questions in the fourth quarter of last night's game as we continue. Zolak, now you can't fall apart now.
You're weeping.
You can fall apart.
You can see it. I'm sure you can see it on the simulcast.
No, you can't. I'm fine.
Good God, man.
No one noticed.
Pull yourself together.
No one noticed. Sean Silver with the Hub headlines here, and then we'll be back, maybe.
Hot takes.
I am Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Wrong song.
Oh. Zoe and Beetle, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't need anybody to check in on me anymore. I'm fine. Zolak and Bertrand here. It's 12:40 on a Friday afternoon. And Patriots got the win last night, 37-20. Get back to your phone calls in a moment. But first, Scott Zolak last night on the television broadcast. We had Dan Roach and Matt Chatham on the radio side. Did a great job. And Sosi and Zoe were doing preseason on the TV. And they did a segment last night. It's hashtag Ask Zoe. So here's a chance to ask Scott Zolak with the Patriots, as everyone knows, is a backup to Drew Bledsoe. he's around the team a lot and has been for years as a sideline guy first and then alongside Gil Santos. So you can ask him anything about the game, football with the Patriots. There's a wealth of information. So what type of stuff was Zoe asked last night in the hashtag Ask Zoe segment of the game?
Zoe, will you ever go swimming in the ocean again?
Yeah, down in the Caribbean where the water is clear. Up here? Mm-mm. I mean, it's their world, right? You're talking about the sharks. I mean, we protect seals. I understand. We're not getting into all this stuff with nature. We're not going to do it because they're going to get calls. Someone's going to complain. The thing's 3 tons. They're 18 feet long. They have teeth. And they keep replenishing those teeth when they lose teeth. But watch the movie. All they do is swim, they eat, and they make baby sharks.
This is NFL.
This ain't rocket science, folks. Most attacks happen in 3 feet of water.
Touchdown, James White.
These are facts. You're a fact guy. Not a fat guy, but a fact guy.
Third and three.
You like facts. I'm giving you the facts.
I love Sosi there.
Isaiah Wynn hobbling off the field.
Touchdown, Chris Hogan. Yeah, teeth, replenishing teeth.
Right, 18 feet, teeth. I'll swim in the Caribbean. You know what? Somebody.
Isn't this a human world? He says it's their world. Is it really?
Well, the
feels like a human world.
The water is the shark's world, I believe.
I see what he's saying. Zoe
is alluding to there. But someone should also clue Zoe into the movie Jaws, The Revenge, which is commonly referred to as Jaws 4. It is a Michael Caine vehicle, in addition to some other actors. The woman played Chief Brody's wife, still, I believe, the only original there, who is still in Jaws 4. That takes place in the Caribbean, where she goes to escape the horror of Amity and what happened, years ago.
Sure.
Put it behind up there. And one of the sons now is a marine biologist. And guess what they find down there in the Caribbean?
Not a shark.
Great white shark.
And oh, no.
So, I'm just saying, Zoe, be careful.
They're everywhere.
Because I'm pretty sure that
I don't
movie,
think you can escape them.
That movie is a documentary.
What's tough is what he said earlier, which is 3 feet of water. They're coming at people in 3 feet of water.
Well, that's where people swim.
Well, that's... So, but do you feel better or worse about your chances of being attacked by a shark the farther you go out? Say you go 100 feet out past shore and you're in 20 feet of water. You feel better or worse about that?
No, I don't go swimming that far in the ocean. Do you swim in the ocean, Phil Perry?
Occasionally. I'm more of a floater. I'll go out a ways and just float.
Okay, so do you go
just
out?
Kind of take it all in.
Why salt is that water is very buoyant.
Do you go?
I'm not doing laps in the ocean.
Do you go triathlete?
No, okay. That's not me.
Do you go swimming in the ocean where the water is above your head?
Yes.
I see. Then I don't do that.
Am I in trouble if I do that is my question.
I think the farther you
it's
go
like a
out,
chicken
the more,
or the egg thing. Like you said it, people are hanging out in 3 feet of water. But am I putting myself in a better spot if I'm getting away from all the other people and I'm going out into deeper water?
No.
Now are you out there and you're okay, swimming then. And you're kicking your legs and you're thrashing, or are you just like Phil and you're floating? Maybe that's not an attractive thing to a shark.
Could be a buoy for all they know.
Could be, or it could be a seal that's just out there for a float.
That's true.
You don't want to look like a seal.
If I lose a leg, though, because a shark gave me a good old chomp mm-hmm. and then realize that ain't seal. Too bony. Too much going on there. I'll leave him alone.
You'll still have your face, though.
I'll
so
still have
okay.
my face. That's all that matters.
But if the shark starts messing with the face, then you fight back?
Sharks, there's no way a shark is getting at your face the way a bear would. I think no. a bear is just looking for death.
We're not.
The bear is looking for
looking
the quick
for honey.
The quick KO.
Looking for food.
I don't think we're going to go down this road again.
It's a movie. All they do is swim, they eat, and they make baby sharks.
Nothing about eating human faces.
This NFL. Checked out.
This ain't rocket science, folks.
Thank you. That was the hashtag ads. Did Zoe get a call from the league on that segment of the broadcast last night? Or is it just about the helmet rule discussion? No? They left him alone.
You never know.
Eli is in Chestnut Hill. Eli, go ahead. You're on with Hardy and Phil Perry.
Hi, I was wondering, I'm totally not sure. Is the helmet rule solidified, or is there any chance that they can modify it or completely remove it before the regular season?
Well, you've been in some of these meetings where they're trying to explain it to you. How has it been presented to you, Phil?
It's been presented to us in such a way that this is the rule. This is how we are moving forward. But again, I think the way they call it may be modified between now and the regular season. They are trying to build a library of calls and of video clips where this new rule has been enforced. And they want to be able to go back over those and say, this was the right call here, it was the wrong call here. It's almost like they are trying to find a way to log all the potential penalties and the potential different types of hits that could be called in the regular season. And they just want to log them all. They're going to throw out a percentage of them when the regular season comes around and say, that's not one we should have called. But they just want to be able to go back and reference that play later. So that's what I mean when I say people should keep their heads about them, I think, to some extent when they see this call made in the preseason, because they have told us we are going to err on the side of throwing flags. So just know that in all likelihood, at least from what they've told us, there are going to be more of these calls per game now than there will be in the regular season.
All right, back to your thoughts on Tom Brady, what you saw out of him last night, the receivers, and really some more talk about the defense, which we haven't gotten into enough here on this day after the preseason game number 2 with the Patriots beat the Eagles 37-20. Zolak and Bertrand, it's Hardy and Phil Perry filling in. One thing I do want to bring up before we get back to the Patriots game last night. They did beat the Eagles 37-20, the final from Gillette Stadium. A lot of people have said that we're really asking the wrong question now when it comes to the shark versus bear thing.
Okay.
In a fight between a shark and a bear, who would you take?
Well, the bear's going to have to be the one in the water there.
That's correct. I mean, it's going to be a home game for the shark.
It's going to be a home game for the shark. But let's say this. We're talking about shark attacks happening in 3 feet of water. If a bear is in 3 feet of water, he's still plenty mobile. He's still plenty dangerous. I'm taking the bear there. If it's a grizzly.
Give me a grizzly against like a juvenile great white.
Yeah, that's going to the grizzly. The grizzly's fine in the in that level of water.
Yeah, like
no
a,
issue.
Like a, but I mean a big shark. I mean, we're talking like a 500-pound great white shark against a grizzly bear in say 4 feet of water.
See, I think this is where the mentality comes into play. The bear is an angry fella. The shark is just trying to eat some seals, basically.
And bears don't care.
I don't think you're going to see a shark come back for bite after bite after bite of a bear the way that a bear would just relentlessly attack anything that came into its path.
It's a quick strike offense if you're a shark. So, I mean, that could be over in one bite.
Not really.
You come in, you take a big chomp out of a grizzly.
Silver, have you seen a grizzly bear?
Out of that grizzly.
Maybe if you get its face. That might be your one shot. If you're the shark, rip that bear's face off with one clasp of your jaw.
The bear is down there looking for some saltwater salmon, and the shark sneaks up on him.
Mm-hmm. Big chomp. Maim.
Maybe. There's like too much hair. Like the shark can't be happy about that.
How big
it's
going to
take
jaw?
A bite out of a shark and just say...
500-pound great white shark, though. How big is the mouth on that shark? It's got to be huge.
Yeah. But that's also not going to be in 3 feet of water. I thought we were playing in 3 feet of water here.
4 feet?
You're changing feet? The arena now on me.
Four feet? I don't know.
You out there floating as the referee there, Phil?
500-pound shark in 4 feet of water? It seems unrealistic.
As opposed
to everything else we've discussed today, which is incredibly realistic.
Let it simmer for a while. All right?
My answer is made, but I'll let it simmer.
Your answer is what? You're taking the bear?
Unless I'm swayed. Yeah, I'm taking the bear.
I'm taking the bear in that one, too.
Yeah.
Shark versus bear. Not a would you rather. Literally, the shark taking on the bear.
It's gotten to the point that if you are under the impression that the shark is more dangerous, either with a human involved or in a 1v1 matchup with a bear, you're grasping at straws. Sorry, you just are.
You're whistling past the graveyard.
I will not be swayed.
You're going to end up in.
Maybe I'm a Cape Cod kid. You know, I'm not one of these people who summered there. I grew up there. You know, you grow up, you hear some stories. You know, you see some things. You read the news. There's a fear that's instilled in you. So, shark.
So, have you ever been hunted by a polar bear? Did you hear that caller earlier?
That is true. I've heard that before.
That is terrifying.
Chuck is a scuba diver. He wants to probably not talk about the Patriots. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, fellas, no, I just listened to all the shark talk, and I just wanted to kind of weigh in. I mean, I do a lot of shore dives here in Plymouth. I grew up in Plymouth. The water is my second home. It really is. And, I mean, you literally have a better chance of dying in a car wreck because, like, someone blows a stop sign on your way to the beach than you do by getting bit by a shark. And I think that when you're out in the water, and I think a lot of my scuba diving friends kind of relate to this the same way, when a shark sees you, even though you're wearing a suit that looks like a seal, which I don't know why they don't make those things like Star Spangled Banner colors, but I don't think a shark wants anything to do with you when you're in the water. You got air coming out of you, and you're a freak to him.
Chuck, and I appreciate your expertise, but a lot of this has been established. We are breaking new ground with the shark versus the grizzly bear conversation. Who do you have in that fight?
Well, you know, the old saying is you don't have to run faster than the bear, just faster than your friend. And I think that the grizzly bear would absolutely, totally whip up on a shark. Mm. I think he'd grab him and put his claws into him and just annihilate him. But, I just think it's funny with the whole Shark Week. Spielberg said, he knew that they'd get so much backlash from the movie, he would have never made it because it's just a joke, man. But I absolutely think the bear would kill the shark. That's my opinion.
Let's not go overboard with like the sharks are people too movement here. Like that, like
it's not a joke to that guy up
that
in the
guy,
hospital.
There's a guy in the hospital here in Boston because he seemingly minding his own business was attacked by a shark.
Well, Spielberg just would have jumped right over to E.T. and skipped Jaws altogether.
Yeah.
Stop it, Steve.
Okay.
Stop it, Steve. Please.
Get out of here with that.
John and Stoughton on the Patriots defense. Go ahead, John.
I just wanted to say, in regards to like Matt Patricia being gone, like say the new defensive coach, you know, whips these guys into shape, you know, and has the defense playing great, you know, this year. How does that look for Matt Patricia, you know, because if he gets more out of the defense than he did, are people going to start looking at Matt Patricia like, oh, you just, you know, you're only good by osmosis of being around, you know, Bill Belichick and, you know, quick, can I make a quick, you know, shark bear thing?
Of course.
Yeah. In regards to the shark bear thing, is there any way we can feed Joe Kelly to a shark or a bear? Because I'm just curious.
That's a better question for Maz, I think, coming up. Or Sean Silver, who's a bit of a seam head himself. Is Joe Kelly, are we at the point where you want to feed him to a shark or a bear? Or is there hope to be had for Joe Kelly?
Joe Kelly's rather bony. So, I mean, I'm thinking about the nutritional value for
the reliever. Would it be better for the Red Sox if they were to feed Joe Kelly to a large predator?
Yes. Joe Kelly was traded here in 2014. I can't believe that he is still with this team. He's provided pretty much nothing after May of this year. Let's get him out of here.
Here's the thing. Maybe an attack from one of those animals on Joe Kelly would scare him straight in some ways. And maybe, just maybe, he would know where the baseball is going as soon as it leaves his fingertips, like one time. That would be great. That would be tremendous. Somebody who watches a lot of Joe Kelly would love to see him have an idea of where the baseball is going on occasion.
That's a good point. I could also see him challenging the shark, like, come on, come on, come get some.
Rip that shirt off.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of a screw loose.
Do you think that the team is going to be reasonably affected by the absence of Matt Patricia this year, the addition of Brian Flores? Do you see anything going on last night? I mean, obviously the pass rush was intense and aggressive last night. Is that just like a game two of the preseason type of, let's try this on for size?
Yeah, I would say, you know what, if we're being reasonable about it, if we're being logical, I would say odds are, we shouldn't get all worked up about what we saw in terms of the pass rush last night. However, you asked me earlier, is there reason to believe that the defense may have a different approach in terms of how aggressive it is getting after the quarterback? And I would say to that, yes, there certainly is reason to believe it, because this is now Brian Flores' unit. And it's still Bill Belichick's unit, right? But it's Brian Flores who's making the calls. And Brian Flores, according to players, has already made things a little simpler, made it a little bit easier to play faster. And the obvious reaction to that, as somebody who's watched the team for a long time, I know there are a lot of people out there as well, it's like, huh, interesting. All of a sudden, the rocket scientist is no longer the defensive coordinator, and things have gotten easier to understand, and people are able to play a little bit faster. I would like to see if what we saw last night in terms of linebackers and people from the second level, whether it's Kyle Van Noy or Patrick Chung, Dante Hightower didn't play last night, but those types of players, are you feeling as though you're freed up to send them more frequently, Brian Flores? Or are we going to see more of the same, which has been generally under Matt Patricia, which was under Matt Patricia, 3-4-man rushes, try to keep the quarterback in the pocket, make him beat you from there?
Yeah.
It'll change from week to week.
Oh, yeah, depending on the offense that you're facing, sure. But maybe if there were going to be an overlying philosophy, things are going to be loosened up a little bit.
That's what it sounds like. Again, it's still so early, and defenses generally at this point in the year are so vanilla that it's hard to know exactly what it'll look like. And I'm sure they will still be mixing things up. They'll mix up their fronts. They'll mix up their personnel. That's what Bill Belichick wants to do. Brian Flores, though he is different than Matt Patricia, is like Matt Patricia, someone who learned football at the feet of Bill Belichick.
All right, we'll continue with this and your call, 617-779-0985. Hub headlines here from Sean Silver, 90 seconds, no commercials.